you think I have come to bring peace to the earth?" Jesus asks. The answer, of course, is yes, because everything else in the Gospels tells us so. "The dawn from on high shall break upon us to guide our feet in the way of peace. Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace among those whom he favors. Peace be with you. My peace I leave with you. Peace is everywhere." But here, Jesus' words sound like the opposite of peace. "Do you think I have come to bring peace?" he asks. "No, I tell you, but rather division." Those are tough words, especially right now, in this moment, when it already feels like we are so polarized and divided. It affects our country, the communities we belong to, and for some of us, our families. Those words about fathers divided against sons and mothers against daughters aren't just theoretical. There are very real divisions, and they cause immense pain and anger and sorrow. More division feels like the last thing that we want or need. I'm convinced that Jesus did not set out to divide us, and that the division we experience pains Jesus as much as it pains us. Jesus set out to bring peace. The issue is that we sometimes misunderstand what Jesus means by peace. We often think of peace as the absence of division or conflict or violence. But that is insufficient. The kind of peace that Jesus set out to bring was more than that. It was all of those things, but also the presence of justice, of healing, of wholeness. What we see in this passage is Jesus' deep and urgent passion for this kind of peace. And we will see it later as he ends his journey and enters Jerusalem, weeping and grieving that the people do not recognize the things that make for true peace. Jesus wishes it were here now, because every moment that it is not here, people beloved by Jesus are suffering. We see this urgency and also Jesus' complete transparency about what it looks like to get to that kind of peace. Many of us have been taught at some point along the way that the call of the gospel boils down to being nice. It has its roots, I think, in the way that we struggle to condense the gospel in a way that's understandable to children. Be nice to your brother, we say. Be nice to your classmates. The gospel of nice has the best intentions, but is not really the gospel. Jesus is not actually very nice, because the world, as it was in Jesus' time, and the world as it is in our time, is so very far from the justice, wholeness, healing kind of peace. Nice has the best of intentions, but nice has a way of keeping things the way that they are. It is polite and respectable and strives not to do anything that might risk upsetting or offending or hurting feelings. And in a vacuum, those would be good and honorable things. But in the world as it is, nice is not neutral. Getting to the justice, wholeness, healing kind of peace requires transformation. It requires facing difficult truths, disruption, upheaval. Those are the things that make for true peace. And Jesus' passionate pursuit of this kind of peace means that he sometimes offends people, like when he eats with the wrong people, or heals on the Sabbath, or pronounces woe on someone. He disaffects people for whom his message is just too much, like the rich young man. And he regularly finds himself in open conflict with the political and religious authorities, culminating in the cross. It reminds me of a short story by fantasy writer Ursula Le Guin. She describes the town of Omeloth. It is, by all accounts, a kind of utopia. Omeloth sits on a sparkling harbor, surrounded by mountains, with avenues of trees and great parks and magnificent buildings. Its people are mature intelligent, and passionate. There is no king, no sword, no slaves, no soldiers. There is no conflict, no division. Instead, there is, quote, a boundless and generous contentment, a magnanimous triumph felt not against some outer enemy, but in communion with the finest and fairest souls of men everywhere. It is seemingly the most perfect, most peaceful of places. But after describing the wonders of Omelas, the narrator continues, in a basement, or perhaps a cellar, there is a room. It has a locked door and no windows. The room is about 3 paces long and 2 wide, a mere broom closet or disused tool room. In the room, a child is sitting. It looks about 6, but is actually nearly 10. It lives on a half bowl of corn and grease a day. The child, who has not always lived in the tool room, can remember sunlight and its mother's voice, and sometimes speaks. I will be good, it says. Please let me out. I will be good. They never answer. The narrator continues, they all know it is there, the people of Omelas. Some of them have come to see it, and some are content merely to know it is there. They all know that it has to be there. If the child were brought up into the sunlight and out of that vile place, if it were cleaned and fed and comforted, that would be a good thing indeed. But if it were done, in that day and hour, all the prosperity and beauty and delight of Omelas would wither and be destroyed. Those are the terms. What do we think of such a place? What do we think of this bargain that they have struck? It looks like the people of Omelas have achieved perfect peace. There's no war, no conflict, no division. But the violence that oppresses and inflicts suffering on even this one child is too much. And the way that the citizens come to accept that suffering as the price of their comfort and happiness means that there is no wholeness for them either. Omelas falls far short of the standard of true peace. The short story is named for the ones who walk away from Omelas, the ones who, when they come of age and are told about this child, decide they cannot consent to it and leave. There is something profoundly good in that refusal to accept things the way they are. But following in the steps of Jesus asks us for more. It asks that we practice being willing, like Jesus, from a place of deep love, to confront and challenge the things that stand in the way of true peace. It's a big ask. It's hard, I know. It requires screwing up our courage and resisting our desire to be nice and polite. It will cost us something in our comfort, maybe even in our reputation. And we are afraid of how it might affect our relationships. But love tells the truth. And those costs pale in comparison to the suffering of those on the receiving end of injustice and oppression. And our own wholeness is on the line too. In these in-between days between the coming of Jesus and the realization of the kingdom, the path to real peace will sometimes lead us into conflict and division. Sometimes breaking is part of healing. But Jesus will not settle for anything less. In his boundless love, he bears that conflict in his body on the cross. He aches with us in the pain of separation. And he reassures us that he is working even now to reconcile us to God and one another in real and perfect peace.